The second reading is from George Orwell's Homage to Catalonia, in which he describes how, while fighting on the front line during the Spanish Civil War, he saw a man jumping out of the enemy trench, half-dressed, and holding up his trousers as he ran. Orwell hated the fascists with all his might, but nonetheless, he gave this famous description of his reaction to that man. "I did not shoot at that man, partly because of that detail about his trousers. I had come here to shoot at fascists. But a man who is holding up his trousers isn't a fascist. He is visibly a fellow creature, similar to yourself, and you just don't feel like shooting at him." I have been delivering sermons now for 44 years. One of the definitions of mental illness is doing the same thing over and over again, even though it has no measurable effect. Phyllis Diller, for example, stayed married for 26 years, but she said that she should have known early on that the marriage was doomed. "For our first wedding anniversary," Phyllis said, "my husband Fang gave me luggage. It was packed. My mother damn near suffocated." But even though it took her 26 years, Phyllis finally got wise it wasn't working. And me, 44 years of preaching against violence and greed and injustice, and what do I have to show for it? Now, I know it is difficult for us Unitarian Universalists to measure success. Evangelical preachers can measure success by the number of people who give themselves to Jesus. Hindu wise men can measure the power of their preaching by how many of their followers reincarnate as amoebas and how many as cattle. But it's tougher for us, as it is in all things religious. I love the story of the young Unitarian Universalist boy who was engaged to be married to a young woman who had grown up in high church Anglicanism in Britain. And in order to acquaint her fiancé with the intricacies of the Anglican service before their wedding, she took them with her one Sunday to Christ Church Cathedral, Oxford. And throughout the service, of course, the young man was kneeling and leaping up and chanting and reading from the Book of Common Prayer until finally, sweating and exhausted, he took out his handkerchief, wiped his brow, and laid his handkerchief over his lap to dry. And when the young woman saw that, she leaned over to him and she said, "Darling, is your fly open?" To which the startled young man replied, no, but should it be?" So it's much harder for us to measure success, but I'm going to try one more time to have a measurable impact on the world. And I want to begin this mental rehabilitation by telling you a little bit about Roger Williams, you know, the guy who founded Rhode Island. Roger Williams was a nutcase, and the colony that he founded, Rhode Island, became the refuge for every flower child and ne'er-do-well in the New World. There weren't really any Unitarians or Universalists back then, but if they had been, they would all have been shacked up in Rhode Island, eating quahogs and Johnny cakes. And Rhode Island's greatest contribution to culinary history, the chow mein sandwich, a scoop of chow mein between two pieces of Wonder Bread. Mm. Good. The Puritans used to call Rhode Island the sewer of New England. They were speaking theologically. They didn't even know about the chow mein sandwich. Now, what is interesting to me about Roger Williams is this. Roger Williams referred to the Indians as barbarians. Now, that doesn't sound too enlightened, but in the mid-17th century, all Europeans called the Native Americans barbarians. But Roger Williams believed that despite the fact that Native Americans were barbarians, they had rights. They shouldn't be coerced into abandoning their own religious beliefs, for example. They should actually get paid for the land that the Puritans stole from them. And that last point was particularly offensive to the other Puritans, and that was a major reason that they banished Roger Williams to the wilderness of Rhode Island. And why did Williams believe, contrary to virtually everyone else of his era, that even barbarians had rights? Well, obviously, he believed that they too were children of God, but he believed something even more important. He believed that only God could say who was or was not his child, and that our job as humans was to create a civic order fit for all people, whether at the end of the day they turned out to be children of God or not. In other words, he believed that all it took to make somebody eligible to be treated decently was that they be a human being. They didn't have to be Puritans. They didn't have to be saved. They didn't have to be rich. They didn't have to be white. They didn't have to have a pretty, unscarred face. They could even be barbarians, and yet we still had to extend to them basic human kindness. Do you have any idea how radical a thought that was in 1682? Do you have any idea how radical a thought that is in 2013? If Unitarian Universalism stands for anything today, it stands for the notion that the names that we apply to human beings, Muslim, illegal immigrant, foreigner, criminal, disabled, disfigured, barbarian, that names do not wipe out a person's claim to be treated with fundamental decency. This is at the very heart of our theological conviction. For unlike the mainstream Puritans of Roger Williams' day, unlike Wahhabi Muslims in Saudi Arabia today, unlike ultra-Orthodox Jews in the occupied territories today, unlike Christian identity fundamentalists here in this country, Unitarian Universalism finds virtue not in some special group to which we belong, not in some special faith that only the initiated can claim, not even in our common identity as children of God. We find virtue in our common frailty, in the fact that every single one of us laughs and breathes and defecates and bleeds. A man who is holding up his trousers isn't a fascist. He is visibly a fellow creature, and you don't feel like shooting at him. So, how do we Unitarian Universalists bring this conviction home, make our faith live, make our values live? Well, in a thousand different ways, but I think the best way to do it is through the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. UUSC was indeed founded by Waitstill and Martha Sharp, whose movie you'll see next Sunday. We've been around for 72 years. Today, we function in 22 foreign countries and all around the United States in partnership with those who are considered barbarians in their societies. We do four things. We fight for the human right to water. We work for economic justice. We protect civil liberties. And whenever there's a major humanitarian crisis around the world, we're there reaching out to the forgotten people who have been overlooked by the larger aid agencies, finding the most innovative partners we can who are doing the most cutting-edge work and doing it all for a very modest amount of money. I want to just give you three quick examples of what we do. For many years, a large mining company in Guatemala called Goldcorp was allowing toxins from its mine to seep into the water supply of 18 communities of Sipacapa Indians. Now, Mayan Indians have virtually no power in Guatemala. They are the barbarians of Guatemalan society. So UUSC sent a couple of Unitarian Universalist mining engineers here from Colorado to Guatemala to document the damage. And then we took the case to the Inter-American Commission for Human Rights. And guess what? About 3 months ago, Goldcorp agreed to make us go away. to pay $27 million to clean up its mess and install clean water systems in all of those villages. You did that. You and UUSC. I was in Burma about a year ago. Burma, now called Myanmar, used to be one of the most repressive countries on earth. But about 3 years ago, UUSC managed to infiltrate Burma following high cyclone Nargis there. And we made a connection with a network of Buddhist monks. And we asked the monks, what do you need here in Burma? And they surprised us with their answer. What we need, they said, is a credit system. We have no banks in Burma. We have no credit. If a farmer needs money to borrow for a new ox, she or he has to go across the Chinese border and borrow it at 25% interest from a Chinese middleman. We need a credit system. So in cooperation with those monks, we established credit systems in 12 villages 3 years ago. Today, credit systems, credit unions exist in 300 villages. Every week, usually the women of the village come to the monastery. They deposit their dollar or their $1.50 in the credit union. They earn 4% interest. Some of you may want to think of transferring your investments. And at the end of the year, 2% of that money goes to the community for community projects and 2% back to the investors. The credit unions in 300 villages are now becoming the center of political organizing. In one of the villages, so remote that it had never seen a foreigner before I arrived, in one of the villages, the credit union in that village got sick of the military coming into the village in the middle of the night and stealing their sand. Maybe they thought if we write a letter to the military and send a copy to the newspaper, if we do it in the name of the credit union instead of our individual name so we don't get in trouble, maybe that'll make a difference. They sent their letter. The military was so astounded when it appeared in the newspaper that they stopped stealing the sand. You did that. You and UUSC. One last example. This from Northwest Arkansas. That's the center of the poultry industry. Because poultry factories are some of the most unpleasant places to work in the world, most of the workers in them are, of course, undocumented. Today's American barbarians. Immigration is a complicated issue, but I think most of us would agree that whether you are documented or not, if a company hires you to do a job, they ought to pay you for it. But far too often, the big poultry companies just withhold the workers' wages. They steal their wages because they know that the workers will be too frightened to go to the authorities to report them. Well, UUSC is not letting them get away with that. UUSC is following those companies, retrieving that money, $75,000 so far in lost wages, bringing litigation, teaching the workers their rights. You are doing all that, you and UUSC. Well, there's much more that I could tell you about, but suffice it to say that you are, in your support of UUSC, you're doing what the late great evangelical preacher Reverend Ike used to call tangibilitating your Unitarian Universalist values. Now you can even tangibilitate them more directly if you're so inclined, because UUA and UUSC have jointly founded what we call the College of Social Justice, a vehicle through which we are now bringing hundreds of Unitarian Universalists every year around the world with us to do hands-on social justice work, to build eco-villages in Haiti, to teach in schools in Guatemala. Within a few more years, more than 1,000 of us will be going with the service committee on these kinds of projects. Now, I know that all of us have 100 different causes we're asked to support, but there is only one that has all the following characteristics. It bears our Unitarian Universalist name and reflects our values. It spends 87 cents of every dollar on helping people and only 13 cents on overhead. It finds the most groundbreaking solutions to the world's problems that can be implemented cheaply. It makes sure that women and women's voices are included in every one of the projects. and it's run by Bill Shultz. I know it's very difficult for all of us to get beyond thinking of other people in terms of categories to which they belong: Kenyan, lesbian, street person, Wall Streeter, barbarian. Indeed, that's not really something to feel guilty about. The reason we think of people in categories is because if our early ancestors hadn't been able to distinguish between friendly tribes and hostile tribes, we probably wouldn't be here today. But at the heart of our religious faith is the conviction that a person's value comes not from a category to which he or she belongs, but from our common frailty. From the fact that every single one of us laughs and breathes and defecates and bleeds. That's what George Orwell recognized, and it's what another soldier in a very different war recognized too. This is the testimony of a truck driver who witnessed a massacre at Srebrenica in 1995 by Bosnian Serb soldiers of hundreds of Muslim men. The Muslims were bound and gagged and blindfolded, and then all of them were machine gunned to death. There was silence after that, said the truck driver. And then out of that pile of dead bodies, not bodies really, just bits of flesh, out of that pile of flesh came a human being. I say a human being, but it was actually a boy of some 5 or 6 years. It's unbelievable, really. A human being came out and started walking toward the men with machine guns. All of these soldiers had had no trouble shooting people. They had just done it. And the commanding officer said, "Shoot him, shoot the boy." But the soldiers just froze, and the boy kept walking. "Shoot him, goddamn you," cried the officer. But they had all lowered their rifles, and the boy kept walking. And finally, he got to the soldiers who were just standing there. And one of the soldiers, maybe the one who had just killed the boy's father, who knows? One of the soldiers put out his hand and took the boy's hand and walked him to my truck and said to me, "Get him out of here." And I brought the boy to the hospital. UUSC represents the best chance we have to see the human faces behind the labels and to turn our common frailty into a common commitment to the common good. And now, here's your chance to save my sanity. UUSC gets no financial support from the UUA. We are entirely supported by you. Foothills reported this year to the UUA that you have 569 members. And of that, 59 are current members of UUSC. That's 10.3%. Now, I think you can do better than that, don't you? So our goal this morning is just to double that number, signing up 59 new members. The suggested contribution is just $40. If you give us $100 or more, it will be matched dollar for dollar by our congregation in Shelter Rock, New York. And one of your congregant members has very generously agreed to double that contribution. Every contribution of $100 or more will be matched first by Shelter Rock, and secondly, up to the first $1,000, by anonymous members of your congregation. $100 will bring UUSC $300. And if you can't afford $40, we will take anything and consider you a member in the interest of my mental health. Because remember the definition of mental illness: doing the same thing over and over again, though it has no measurable impact. But today, I'm not asking you to do something as esoteric as bring justice to the world. I'm asking you to do one simple thing, which is to take the envelope that is in your orders of service, fill it out, deposit it at the table, UUSC table in the hall behind us, and join UUSC. And by the way, every study has shown that when people give to others, it improves their own mental health. So this morning, I'm offering you a twofer. Save both your own sanity and mine at the same time. Maurice Sendak, who was the author of the great children's book, Where the Wild Things Are, said that the favorite letter he had ever received from a child was this one. "Dear Mr. Sendak, how much does it cost to get where the wild things are? If it is not too expensive, my sister and I would like to spend the summer there. So I hope you'll join me where the wild things are. It's not too expensive. I was in a congregation about a third the size of this one in Texas a couple of months ago. They signed up almost 59 members themselves. Now, surely you Coloradans, living as you do in the healthiest state in the country, are not going to allow a bunch of barbecue slurping, bourbon swigging, pot-bellied Texans to show you up, are you? Because you see, in the battle against anguish and despair, it's not enough to wish, not enough to talk, not enough to worship, not enough to hope, not enough to pray. They're all good, but they're not enough. In the face of tyranny and repression and greed and fear, what is required is to join hands, to use our collective Unitarian Universalist power to make our voices count, to make our values live, to make our faith shine. So I hope this morning you will give me your hands, give me your feet, give me your hearts, and give me your money. And together, let's hear it for the barbarians. Let's embrace the barbarians. Let's stand with the barbarians here, there, and wherever they are found. Amen. The closing hymn is